Proficiency test and simulation. What is simulation? Actual conditions you try to recreate here. You have heard about flight simulator, right? We have a person who's wanted to become a pilot. He's a cadet. He's ready for flying now. So he's put in a flight simulator. It is there in airports. So actually you sit in a cockpit and all the feeling, all the experience of a flying is simulated by him by doing this. He feels complete experience you go through. Right? So when you put people on the job, which is actually like the job, then they simulate. So the same type of feelings and expressions come out. An employee who may be capable may not have had an opportunity to work to display real capability. There are a lot of people who are capable, but they don't get an opportunity. They are in the wrong placement, wrong function in the company. Proficiency tests and simulation tests can help in bringing out the real capability of an individual who has no opportunity to exhibit, use them at the workplace. One of my employees in the production unit where I was working wanted to, he went on saying that I want to go to inspection department in quality control. And he was good in that, as I saw them. So they said, fine, you do one thing, 2 days in a week for the next 2 weeks, just go there to that department and simulate, go and see. Let's see whether you're good in that. And the feedback we got from the quality control department was that guy is good in that. So this is simulation. Then finally he got transferred there because he was more useful there and he was more motivated there. Tests and simulations are ideal for testing new employees or existing employees in the new job. The above three components, strategic, organization need analysis, job analysis, job order analysis, can be further broken down into six components as below. Context analysis. This involves an analysis of the business context and the reasons for which the training is done. Why am I doing this? This is a context. Okay. Some relevant questions asked in this analysis include why a training program recommended as a solution to a business problem. These are some trigger questions. Okay. There are many more. You must know what questions to ask. What has been the history of the organization with regard to employee learning interventions? In what context and related factors is the learning and practice to be done? Some few questions have been given here. You can generate more. A context training need analysis will help define what the organization hopes to accomplish through the training. Most organizations are multifaceted entities. Multifaceted means they've got number of faces or number of accountabilities they have. And an effective training needs analysis process needs to understand specific complexities through context training need analysis. What does it mean? There's a marketing department which is in touch with the customers and the world outside. There's a production department which is in touch with the people inside, internal customers. So these are two different facets, just to give you a simple example. Okay. So in a context training, I must know for what context am I training? Am I training people, internal customers or external customers? Or marketing people who are dealing with external customers? Okay. And the complexities are two different things. If I'm going to train people for customer orientation, I'm using a word customer orientation, right? Then I must know that customer orientation for internal customers within the company is a one context, different from the context of external customers for a marketing person. These are two different training modules, they're not the same. I can't take one module and deliver for both. I'm losing the context. Third point is, in this initial phase, a training program designer consults decision maker, lends an attentive ear and generally feels the pulse of the organization. This is what I do. So if they tell me I want a customer orientation training, I said, who is the customer? What type of customer? Is it internal or external? Then they'll say both. I said both will be separated. They won't be together. If you want them together, then I need to have two different contexts. Getting it? Okay. Next we come to participants analysis. The participant who need the training, I must analyze. It's a critical step in training need analysis. It's an analysis dealing with the potential learners and instructors. Who will receive the training and the level of existing knowledge in subject? Does he have the IQ to go through the training? Is he really needed? What's the learning style? People have got different learning styles. Fast learners, slow learners, absorptive learners, all different types of people are there. So that learning style you need to know. Who will conduct the training and with what? What is your expertise? Okay. To produce training material, the course designer or the training manager resorts to training needs analysis to gather information to design the training program according to the needs, preferences and abilities. Okay? Factors such as education, age, time, availability, constraints, etc. influence how people learn. Again, these are generic things. Age. People are a little older, don't learn. That's what people feel. It's not so. It's an attitude. Education need not be. Highly educated people are reluctant to learn. Need not be. Least educated also reluctant to learn. These are myths. Time availability is your own individual creation. If somebody says, I don't have time, I only say that you have to create the time. Very simple. Constraints. Constraints are again mental, most of the cases. Now, these are all things which we need to de-link first. We need to first address it before they are into the workshop. Negative experiences with certain learning methodologies can create resistance to some approaches of training. A person must have gone through a negative experience, so he'll say, no, I don't want to go for training. So it addresses that also. If you had a negative experience with somebody, some training program, it need not be generalized into all training programs. That person has to be told. People generalize. They have done, they got one experience, they'll say, no, all will be like this. That's human nature, human behavior, right? This phase identifies such potential pitfalls. Participant training needs analysis should also gather crucial information pertaining to learning styles. People learning differently and after identifying learners' preferred styles in this stage, the training program designer should take into consideration these findings to develop training methodology. I've already explained, this is just coming as a slide. Third is work analysis. I must analyze the work that the person is doing, the actual work. The work is not a part of my training, but I must know in that work what sort of nuances are there, what sort of behavior is expected, what sort of attitudes are expected. It's the analysis of the task being performed. It involves examining activities, tasks and roles of the jobs and the competencies required for the effective performance. It seeks to specify the main duties and skill level required. Work analysis helps in ensuring that a given training method and context are aligned with the relevant job. Very important. The context of the job is production or quality control in the shop floor, which is involving dealing with certain machines and tooling, and he's only dealing with one person. So that's a context. So there I may be wanting to have a certain type of a training methodology, right? Again, what sort of questions we need to ask to get some answers? A few of them are put in the slide. What's a job under review and what are the main duties? What are the high level skills required? To what standards are people expected to do the job? Are they currently meeting those standards? And many more are there. Just a few have been given here. Fourth is content analysis. What exactly is to be done? This covers the analysis of the body of knowledge imparted to the source document, the syllabus as you call it, manuals, laws, procedures, etc. that needs to be delivered. The content of the training should not conflict with the job requirements. A person is into, let us say, his job is to meet customers on weekends. That's a role, that's a job given to him, which is accepted. Now my training should not say that don't work on Saturday and Sunday. Nowhere in the training, directly or indirectly, I should mention that, because I must know that that is conflicting with the job requirements. And the content of training should not be such that where the training has to be attended on weekends. It's conflicting with the job requirements. Okay, so certain trainings, for example, I conduct based on the job requirements of the people. They say that on these days we are not available. There are companies which say that we don't want any training during Saturday, Sunday, because that's a day when we rest. It's a holiday. They would like to have a corporate training only on weekdays. Then I ask them, on the weekday, is your job not getting sacrificed? Your prime time, you're supposed to be in the company. He says, no, that is a training is a part of the timetable itself. I said, lovely. So these are things some of you must be experiencing it as trainers, and you should know this. At the same time, all rules and procedures need to be fully incorporated in the training program. It should be very structured and it should go in a very legal fashion. A content training need analysis seeks answers for the below questions. Some are illustrated here. Are there essential building blocks one needs to learn in order to do this? Are we going systematically? A leading to B, B leading to higher C, etc. Are these building blocks of knowledge laid out in manuals or in other documentation? How are you giving it to them? In what order and how are these building blocks normally taught? Are you teaching A first and then C, then B? Each trainer will have his own methodology of teaching it. Okay? With this approach, inputs such as administrative procedures, laws, computer application, documentation are used to identify learning topics. The raw material for input training needs, need analysis may present itself in an existing course that need to be updated, policies that need to be taught, or material that a group of experts have been brought together. The raw material that's coming to me, then I need to work on that. Content training needs analysis, establishes a logical flow, ensures that the definitions are found for key terms, groups and data to easy to follow material, and ensure that the levels of clarity in training's content are appropriate. In simple terms, I'm getting information that I collect and I've got to put them in a proper systematic manner so that people are able to identify what am I getting trained into, which page, which this thing, which term means what. In many cases, let me confess, we don't go this detailed, but we need to know it as a process that needs to be followed. When you're having a very large organization and you're training a large number of people for the same content year after year, we need to follow this. Okay? Criticality needs to be benchmarked during content training. What is critical? Something that can go wrong at the wrong moment. So those criticality has to be always kept. Worst case scenario, as you call it. And then that is very important to be understood. A seasoned trainer establishes criticality in consultation with the course designer. So I ask the person, when I go to a company, they want me to do a training. I say, what's the worst case that can happen? Worst thing that can happen in this scenario. So they give me a few points. So keeping the worst case scenario, the training is designed so that even if the worst happens, this person can address it. Okay? Fifth point is suitability analysis. Is it suitable? Is it suitable? Sometimes you do a training program, it may not be suitable for the company. It may not be required. Why do it? A typical, not all, some family-run businesses, they call me for training. And when you do the training, it is not absorbed at all. It is not suitable. The why are you doing? No, I just want to give them some time, you know, some 2 days, let them go for a fun. One person told me. I said, training is not fun. He said, let them go out and be enjoy. He said, this is not for enjoyment. It's not suitable. He said, why are you concerned? I said, I am concerned because I want to add value to you. Then it turned out to be he didn't want a training at all. It is just that he wanted 2 days out. I could have taken the money and done something and gone. I didn't want to do it. That's not me. It involves to determine whether training is a desired solution for a training. Maybe one of the problems. It involves to determine whether training is a desired solution for training. Maybe one of the solution for the training performance problems. So this company may not want a training. The performance may be because of some other reason. So without a training also you can solve it. Suitability analysis considers the following essential question. Is non-performance due to lack of knowledge and skills, or are there other reasons? I gave you an example of a family managed business. Now this is only sticking on to one particular domain. But suitability broadly involves, is it suitable? Is it required? That's one thing which you must keep in mind. Training is often seen as a quick fix for changing individual and organization performance. It's like taking a pill to stop your stomachache. Symptomatic. It's not. In reality, the impact of training has its limitations. If you're asking for a 2-day training for changing somebody's behavior, forget it. As a trainer, if you're doing it, please understand, behaviors don't change in 2 days. Training cannot replace the role of managers in giving feedback to employees on performance matters. Training cannot replace the role of obviously the manager is a person who's actually taking care of it. But training does influence the subordinate to be a better subordinate with the manager. The manager may have his limitations, he being an internal person. The training coming from an external person, he may give a different perspective so that the employee starts changing his attitude towards the manager. The manager is supposed to, if the manager is playing his role well in influencing the employees, then they don't need a training at all. Because the role has been having an issue, so they have to go for a trainer. So cannot replace is something which I don't totally agree. The training may be required when the role of the manager is not proper. Suitability analysis partially ensures that training is not being used by management to renounce their development responsibility, but to support it. That example I give you, just want to send somebody. They said, you do the training, we'll see. After the training, no feedback is given, nothing is given. It is business as usual. They are renouncing their development. They said, we don't want to do, tum log karo. Suitability training needs analysis. Finds out if there is a clear justification for the cost associated. I've already told it earlier. You're spending money on this trainer. Why do you want to spend it? You don't need it. And your company culture is not supporting training. So why do you waste? Many companies do this. And trainers, sorry to say, some trainers do go along and do the training. They take the money and they go. This gives a bad name. And they are positioning the training as a baby's day out, which is not the case. Training is committed, serious thing. Of course, the serious thing has got fun also. That's different. But it's not that, you know, somebody goes for a training, so he's, you know, enjoying a day or something. No. This is one paradigm which some company cultures have, unfortunately. Cost-benefit analysis. What does it mean? There's a cost and there's a benefit. Cost is measurable. Benefit is felt. It's an analysis of the return on investment of training. The effective training should result in a return of value to the organization that is greater than the initial investment to produce or administer the training. This is a it's an area which is disputable. A lot of people have got different, lot of notions. I put a cost and the benefit is, benefit is a feeling. Benefit is an overall thing. Benefit is a change of behavior, change of attitude, change of atmosphere in the company. Now that, let us understand that change which sustains actually brings the results. And that takes a time. The cost benefit results in a benefit in terms of profits and benefit in terms of sales. You must know to link them properly in terms of a mathematical model. You can't wait for about 10 days and say it didn't benefit, or 20 days or 1 month or something. And there is a method of converting it into that. That is a return on investment. The return on investment is not just an arithmetical figure. It's got intangible, which can't be measured, which is felt, which everybody will agree. Everything is not measurable in behavior. That's the first thing we need to understand. Certain things, attitudes can't be measured. You may have attitude tests and all that, but they can't be measured. They are seen in action, right? Cost-benefit training needs analysis, tries to find out answers to the below questions. You should ask these questions. Is it worth it to effort? Worth the effort to undertake the proposed training? Is it worth it? It's like spending 1,000 rupees and getting a benefit of 1 rupee. Is it worth it? You have to ask this question. What will be the return on investment of the proposed training? Work it out. Are there any cost-benefit benchmarks for the proposed training? Sometimes companies tell me, it didn't benefit us. I said, what was your benchmark? What is the benefit you are expecting? They voice a benefit before the workshop starts. This is the benefit I want. The benefits have not reached. Then I said, where have we gone wrong, you and I? Then the benefit suddenly changes. Whenever you talk in intangible terms, I want you to be a good student. Now, what is good? That's very generic. So today, good student will mean 80% marks. Tomorrow, good student means well behavior. So when people talk in generic terms, please ask them to convert the generic into specific. This is very important in HR. It's very important in training. Because a generic can be highly subjective and it floats from time to time. Get this very clear. And this is one area, there's a lot of dispute going on. Dispute in the sense, we have spent so much of money, nothing has come out of it. And somebody puts a tangible equation in which certain deficiencies are there. Then they blame the trainer, they blame the management. Then they say, hell with the training, let's stop training altogether. Training is humbug. This happens. Okay? A training need analysis is the process of identifying the areas where both individuals and groups in an organization would benefit from training in order to become more effective at achieving their own objectives and the objectives of the organization. I'll read slowly once again. I'm not explaining. A training need analysis, TNA, is the process of identifying the areas where both individuals and groups in an organization would benefit from training in order to become more effective at achieving their own objective and the objective of the organization. Right? What is TNA? It involves 5 steps. Identifying the objective of the organization. Appointing a training coordinator. This is within the organization, a training coordinator. Gathering information about the skills and the abilities of the individuals. analyzing that information, putting it in an order, identifying the gaps and drawing a training plan. Easy to understand, simple 5 points. Logical points. Identifying objectives, what are we doing? In TNAs, ensure that the organization has clear, focused business objectives. It's all repetition, I've told you this in different terms. I'm just going through it. These should be agreed upon by the top management so that there's a clear idea of what the organization is trying to achieve is understood by everyone. I come across top management. They're delegating the work to the HR people or whoever. You do it, don't worry, we'll take you. It's okay, we trust you. It's not enough. They have to also agree upon it. They must know this is the change we need in every which way. I don't have the time, this is not my job. No, this is a part of the strategic job. Usually this is drawn from mission statements and a set of strategic objectives. Mission statement tells you this is what the company stands for. So from there, I have to draw and the objectives from the mission statement, and that strategic objectives will be one of the important key inputs to a TNA, right? A training coordinator is a coordinator between the company and the trainer. The trainer can be from outside or from inside. That this training coordinator plays a very important role. He should be a proper, effective communicator. Even in the smallest organization, it is worth appointing a training coordinator. The reason being, the training needs to be a part of someone's job. Somebody has to take up the responsibility and accountability to see that what is expected from the management is given to the trainer properly and the conducting of the training goes effectively. Often the training coordinator can also be seen as a training administrator, another name given. Commitment to organized training from top management should be both visible and real. They must ask for accountability from the trainer, from the participants. There must be debriefing meetings. Only then we know that the top management is serious about the training. Time and money should be available to plan training for people according to their needs. It's important. No budget, no money. I can't spare my manager. He's busy tomorrow. Client meeting. This is a very common thing in many companies. Okay. Gathering information. Obviously, we need to gather information. Once we are clear on our objectives, we have to train. The training coordinator appointed gathers information about what needs to be done, what is being done, and how well the people are involved. You know, the information about every person whom they feel. Whatever work they are doing. The information found can then be divided into three areas. What do people need to do in order that the objective is achieved of the company? What skills and knowledge do people already possess? What skills and knowledge they need to have in future? Right? Number four, analyzing the information. Now I've gathered information from all the employees, who is doing what. Then I have to see what gaps exist in both knowledge and ability of the current people in the organization to carry out the jobs. What gaps exist in both knowledge and ability in the current people in the organization to carry out the jobs in the future. Point number one is about the present. Point number two is about the future. This stage in the TNA is both stimulating and challenging. Okay. X is doing his job extremely well. He's super efficient. He's a key performer. But I can't be content. That is now. Point number one. In point number two, in the future, I want him to do something different. Now somebody may say that he is talented, why should he go for a training? In the future, he may be wanting some skills which is not in line with today's way of working. So both are important. Last point is, analytical skills are required. We have to analyze properly, objectively, and time to carry out the analysis is essential. It can't be a wishy-washy overnight job. You have to sit down, analyze it, discuss it, and arrive at some common thing. Otherwise, X will say something, Y will say something, and everything will go haywire. Point number five, identify the gaps and drawing a training plan. This is where the gap part of it, the gap analysis, training gap. Analysis of the data leads to the identification of the gap. The TNA identifies both current gaps relating to current job descriptions and possible future gaps, assuming from some form of future development. After the gaps are identified, a training plan is prepared. This gap is what I need to address. And to address this gap, what are the various things I need to do? The training plan prevents the confusion and ultimate inefficiency that tends to result from an ad hoc training approach. What is ad hoc? It's like a band-aid type of a thing. You've got a very big hurt and you're putting a band-aid here. Company is going through a major issue and they say, we got only so much of budget, we'll do only so much. That is ad hoc training approach. Many companies do this. No, we cannot afford so much in this, you do this thing. You know, we want this, we want that, we want that, we want that. A training plan prevents, when you have a training plan, the training plan will tell you this is what actually we want. It's not something which is vague and generic, it's specific. Because the training plan covers the whole organization and is consistent. Underline the word consistent. It's consistent, it goes. It's not we do something there, everything becomes a mess. No. So this is a very important thing. The training gap is very, very important. Friends, I'm repeating it. You may do training need analysis, you may do everything. If the training need analysis is not addressing a proper gap, which is articulated, then you have a major problem. The trainer gets a bad name. So the trainer has to know what is the training gap. In words, ask and get a clarity so that they and you, the company and you, both of you all are in congruence. And you have to keep on reminding yourself and them all along that this is the training gap which I'm addressing, where I'm conducting the training. Otherwise, suddenly assumptions will come. No, this is not what we wanted. This is not what we did. There should be a written document of the training gap. Ask for it. Create one. Validate it. So here we are. That consistency starts with the agreement of what the organization is trying to achieve and what the priorities are at the moment. Okay? Training plans are documents the organization uses to plan the training of everyone accounted for and budgeted for. It's a systematic state approach. The gap has to be properly articulated. Gap has to be very clear because gap is the purpose of the whole training. This cannot be taken lightly, in short. They are working documents. In other words, they keep changing as events and circumstances change. So you cannot have one type of there's a training gap today. The same training gap may come again, but the circumstances will be different. The situation will be different. And they form the core of the investment in the development of the people. Let's understand this very clearly. There's a gap in customer satisfaction behavior with the service people in the company. There's a gap in the customer satisfaction behavior, which is expected with the company service people. This gap is happening in the month of, say, January. The circumstances are different. The situation is different. The same thing, the same gap will again come maybe in the month of June, July. The same gap module what you give for January will not be acceptable now because here the situation conditions are different. Let me take the example of COVID. Pre-COVID, the company had an issue of the service people not servicing the customers properly. That was a gap. That time the conditions were different. Post-COVID, when the COVID is going on in the month of, say, June or maybe May, the same complaint is coming. The company is functioning, people who are working from home, etc. And they are also claiming that we'll take care of customer service. But the conditions are different. So in case they want a training program during this COVID period, assuming hypothetically it's possible, then the gap needs to be considered with the existing conditions. So that is what this means. So don't be under the mistaken notion that the same gap, if it reappears, the same model will be applicable. Not necessary. That is why I always say training gap is the most important part of the training and development. If that is not properly understood, not articulated, you have a major issue. They are also the end result of the TNA. Absolutely. Very clear. As it is, it's hardly worth investing all the time and effort in identifying training needs if nothing happens as a result. Right? Thus, a TNA is quite simply a way of identifying the existing gaps in either knowledge or ability of the people in the organization to carry out the tasks that enable them to do their jobs. The process assumes that the jobs people carry out have been defined in order that the business objectives of the organization will be achieved. I don't need to explain this. It simply tells you that this is the gap found wanting in your behavior. So that needs to be done. Only then the objectives of what you are doing and the organization will be achieved. Finally, a training need analysis will ensure people are better able to do their jobs because they have improved their knowledge and skills in relevant areas and also attitudes. Data collection methods for training need analysis. How do I collect data? It involves collecting information relevant to training from the concerned organization or the department or the source. The aim is to have an authentic database on which to take crucial decisions, not something which is haywire, which is vague, subjective. An objective, understanding, authentic database. Some popular methods of collecting data include reviewing existing documents. Existing documents like annual reports, business policy guidelines, vision plans are reviewed with respect to the task in question. Documents like job description, competency profiles and job cards are reviewed. Existing documents. With respect to people to be trained, documents like educational qualifications, experience, training undergone, performance appraisal reports and personal files are reviewed. So whatever is available documentation, which is based on the current practices and historical data, you review them. One way of doing it. One of the sources of data. Second is conduct individual interviews. Talk to them one-on-one. Get to know what are their views and what they are doing, what they are not doing, where are the roadblocks, etc. That's what is covered in these three bullet points. Individual interviews can be an efficient, flexible and rewarding ways of gathering information. To gather task-related information, the current job holders, their supervisors and particularly the persons concerned as superior performance in the job, said job are interviewed. Need not be only superior performers, even the laggards, the people who don't perform, they can also be interviewed. The current job holders and their immediate supervisors are also interviewed for person-related information. So you interview people one-on-one and with open-ended questions, you get a lot of information data to be collected. The real time information, not something published, not something which is outdated. For organization analysis, top management professionals from different disciplines like marketing, finance, production, technology, etc. may be interviewed. It's important to interview everybody to know the overall picture. Standard rules of interview like interview schedule, trained interviewers, prior appointment, the usual thing, it's important. That's point number two. Point number three is start taking work diaries. People use, you should have work diaries like a logbook. I've done this today, I've done that tomorrow, I couldn't do this. You know, like a to-do list is transferred into the work diary. This can be useful when parts of the organization are mobile and spread out from the core. A diary is used to each participant to be kept over a set period of time. This might cover the task carried out and frequency. Fourth is observation. This involves observing and noting what is going on. That is getting the feel of the situation in real-time basis. This can be done at organization level, occupation level and individual level. Trained observers are used. The objective during observation is to identify both the strengths on build to build on and the deficiencies to overcome. This is done by work study, you know, different types of processes. Okay. A key advantage to using direct observation in the needs analysis is that one gains first-hand knowledge and understanding of the job being performed and the strengths and the weaknesses of the relevant worker. There and then you come to know by observing. It's not published, it's not reported, it's observed face to face, you know, like. Fifth is self-assessment. This involves individuals rating their own skills, knowledge and abilities by employees. However, sometimes employees may be underestimate or overestimate their own capabilities. I mentioned this earlier. So you must learn to be training people to do self-assessment objectively. It is cross-checked with the performance data and the supervisor's report, whatever self-assessment you're giving. In appraisal, we do this very often. People are asked to do self-assessment, then that is cross-checked by the appraiser, right? By asking questions and getting to know more. Six is questionnaire, very popular form, are used when it is not possible to collect the data from interviewing people, when you're not able to meet the person geographically in a different location. So you ask, send questionnaires. It's got some predetermined validated questions printed. Respondent reads and marks his answers. It's a fast way to collect information. And it is easy for analysis and cheaper to administer. But one major issue which you face in questionnaires is that people don't return the questionnaire sometimes. So the return rates may be as low as many people do not like completing them. People don't like to write answers and send it. It's a very common thing. Ask anybody who's doing market survey, they'll tell you this. Okay. Seventh method is critical incident method. Critical incidents are real events in the workplace which lead to superior or effective performance or even inferior performance, something which is negative. Something which stands out from the rest. Such events can be clearly established the cause for the performance and non-performance. So once you know this, you will be able to make out that this is one data that is very critical. If this critical incident is happening frequently, then you know something major has to be done. This involves analyzing an incident to see whether training could be improved, could have improved the outcome. Eighth one is having a problem-solving conference. Have a group of people coming together. The problem is put forward, brainstorming takes place and they try to solve it. So I'll read the bullet points. Another time-tested technique for gathering need analysis material from employees is to conduct periodic problem-solving conferences, which may take the form of or be a part of a plan for a new product, task or technology, or tied in with the training program itself. Okay, it's always helpful to utilize an outside consultant to moderate such sessions, because an outside consultant, you will be taking objective view. Okay, the outside sponsorship has a tendency to letting the workers express their feelings about his organization, and the session can then be geared to a training needs. The current problems that evolve will represent potential areas for training. Ninth is appraisal reviews. During the periodic counseling performance interview, an employee should be questioned regarding his duties and training. Comments regarding rendered during the appraisal interviews normally are genuine and can frequently assist in establishing the needs, variations and penetration that the training program should include. All of us know, after an appraisal is over, the appraisee, the person who's getting appraised, and the appraiser both will determine this is one area where there's a gap where you need to fill up. So an appraisal review is in fact one of the major starting points of a training program, of a training for a person. Feedback at appraisal interview time is valuable, since it's timely information. It should be real time. There and then the feedback should be given. Some companies make it a point to give the feedback later. There is a disconnect. If you give it there and then, you can also get a two-way feedback. You give a feedback, then that person may want to dispute it there and then and tell you, look, this is what I meant, this is what is happening. Because feedbacks which get delayed usually has an issue. Training needs differ from worker to worker, and appraisal sessions allow the employee and the supervisor managers to uncover the cause of the weaknesses in the performance. Obviously, self-explanatory, easy to understand. These deficiencies represent areas for training. Okay? Drive pattern identity. What's your drive? There are certain people who are having a very hyper behavior. The drive is very fast. They would like to take up things. They jump into it. So drive pattern identity is based on the behavioral pattern of a person. The extent of an employee's development depends on his motivations. Identifying the forces that cause an employee to behave in a certain way may be useful in determining his individual training needs and how to stimulate his desire to fulfill that need. When you give some tasks to some people, they are excited, they would like to do it. So you should know that these tasks are good for them. That's a drive pattern identity way of understanding it. Some people will, when you give some tasks, they'll sulk. They say, those are not meant for. So from the behavioral pattern, you can make out, right? An analysis of this kind, for example, may determine the employee has an urgent need for self-confidence. When you like to do something, your self-confidence goes up. Because you feel confident, you also like it. Both ways are there. His individual program should be made to stress the importance of attitude, skills, etc., and any other assets that would give him self-confidence. Now I am giving you my author's perspective. We have come to the end of this particular session. Training need assessment is a multivariate process. There are multiple variables. It is involving too many complex variables like company culture, disposition towards employees, its HR policies, its market brand, its attitude towards learning and development, its reward incentives, etc. Lots of things are linked with each other. Trainers usually do not take up the task of training need analysis, resulting in a disconnect between the real training need gap versus what is delivered as a training. This creates a lot of issues. The trainer gets a bad name, the training is seen as useless, and then in future the company stops even conducting training programs for their employees. So the emphasis is on the training gap that should be understood by the trainer and everybody. Congruently, a trainer is worth his salt needs to explicitly and clearly dig out the training gap by multiple levels of communication with the organization. So you should ask about the training gap to multiple people who are involved in the whole process. Then you get to know exactly the crux of what it is. One or two people may not give you the training gap totally clearly. Others will give the other point of view of the training gap. So multiple views coming together will actually give you what's the training gap. Right? With this, I end this session, my dear friends. Thank you very much and wish you good luck.